It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Cotpost.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast, we are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Podcasts and a lot of other podcast platforms. This week I'm joined by the Chinese lensman, who is at the World Test Championship still, not watching very much cricket. Evening, Doug.
Now then, doing my mileage, isn't it?
Doing your mileage, expenses time.
Not much mileage this week.
Not much mileage in a cricket either.
Forwards to the stadium.
Nice.
Still going to claim it.
newly 40-year-old man, Ben Eustace. Welcome, Ben. Not to 40,
mate.
I'm not there yet. You're old.
Yeah, believe it or not, Russ is the youngest one out of the four of us.
I know, yeah. You wouldn't believe it to look at me. It is bad.
You know what? Ben, he's got you a present because he's teeing himself up for one.
Next year, mate, next year. The farm vet, welcome, Phil. Housewife's favourite.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
You're looking resplendent in a farming gilet, Phil.
Yeah, I'm rocking the browns today.
Love it.
I think I've got three different shades of brown going on.
I bet you've got Chelsea boots on that are brown.
No, actually, I've got my slippers on. But
disappointing. And
still sexy.
last, but by no means least, and by popular demand, this man has got an incredibly healthy knowledge of 1980 Sylvester Stallone movies. And amongst other things, I'd love to welcome former Exeter Chief Chris Bentley to the podcast. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Like I say, we had a few nominations. I think your dad got in touch and said they wanted more Chris Bentley. I don't know whether it was the phone call or the excited bit at the end when you nailed it.
Yeah, I just went a bit sort of Ferris Bueller with, where's Chicka Chicka? What's Chicka Chicka from? I've obviously got it from the Mighty Boosh, but it's a throwback, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought
it's 80s cop films. They all over the Chicka Chicka at the end, didn't they?
Chicka-chicka. Oh, I loved it. Loved
Tango
it.
And cash.
Chicka Chicka.
Yeah, exactly. Just got to throw that in there.
Love it. And I want to take something up with the guys from last week, is the fact that none of them have heard of Over the Top, which I was more than bitterly disappointed about.
I was listening to that in rage. Like, guys, he's there and his son doesn't love him and he wins him back because he can do arm wrestling and he turns his hat round when he goes over the top with the thumb whip.
Amazing.
It is the most amazing film. Sylvester Stallone is just, he had a glorious period.
Is it a documentary?
It could have been. It's based on a true story.
Amazing. So, anyway,
can you just remind people that Russ is actually the youngest of us here and would have been five when that film came out?
Yeah, absolutely. But I went for a phase, like, probably when I was, I don't know, maybe about 12 or 13, where Predator, where I watched Predator, Commando, Over the Top. They were all in that sort of era. First Blood, maybe it was a bit earlier, but that was there. Oh, Cliffhanger was much later. That was mid-90s, early 90s, mid-90s Cliffhanger. But that was, I mean, Cobra was mentioned last week. I mean, that, chewing
Cliffhanger was when you were 11.
Mate, was it?
He does look the oldest.
Yeah, exactly.
But Russ, you've gone through a number of films there. You've got Predator, where they're fighting an alien. Yeah. You've got Commando, where they're fighting communists. You've got Cliffhanger, where they're fighting gravity. And then you've got the arm wrestling movie. Can you see the difference?
Well, slightly. I mean, like you say, we've got Cobra, which was the disgruntled street cop trying to protect an eyewitness from a drug gang. But yeah, it's fine. RoboCop was the other one to add into that, although it wasn't Stallone. But yeah, that was class. Anyway.
Are we just trying to out Eddie at the moment?
Are we trying to outdo Eddie Stevens?
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to start off on a bit of a whim and then get into some actual rugby. And I'm still disappointed. I don't know whether he'll listen to this. I'm hoping he will. Oh, here we go. Well, I'm hoping that he's going to message me back in a minute. JB from the Egg Chasers, everyone's favourite neutral, was supposed to come on this evening. Hopefully he still will. But we're going to kick off talking about the Exeter Chiefs versus Sale Sharks. I mean, you could call it a massacre. Yeah, it wouldn't be far off. I mean, over those two games, we talked about it a bit last week. And Chris, I know you called both results. You know, we'll allow you to bask in that moment of glory in a second. But even when the lineups were announced on Friday, did you have any trepidation as to how the Exeter Chiefs were going to play on Saturday?
No, you knew Chiefs had it in the bag. There was Sanderson's interview post game after the first game. He was done. He had nowhere to go. He'd gone with his gun team. They were on the edge. And then Chiefs just found another gear and went through them. And as soon as they lost AJ McGinty, where all of the invention came from, that was it. They were bait. And JB, God bless him, he said, you know, Jean-Luc Dupreez, or whatever his name is, he's got all the ingenuity and skill of his brothers. And it was true. Like, he didn't have anywhere near the vision. It was going to be route one, and Chiefs, if you try and take on Chiefs in a physical battle, you'll lose.
I mean, yeah, you're right. And the score, whilst the scoreline maybe flattered Sale a touch, those two tries that came pretty much, well, the one that came directly from the restart and the one that came from the turnover at the restart very sort of soon after a couple of phases, actually put a little bit more sort of gloss on it for Sale than there actually should have been. Phil?
Yeah, I think actually, if you look at the first 15, 20 minutes, Sale didn't have anywhere near the intensity of what they had last week. And it was almost like they were all beaten in their heads. So whenever Exeter had the ball, they were probably 2 yards short on the chase, trying to put them under pressure. And it just showed from the very start that they weren't at the races. But I think actually losing Capstick fairly early on and bringing Armand on did Chiefs the world of good. I think he actually made Sale a lot more honest when they had the ball. He's a bit more of a natural
wily,
seven type.
A bit of a wily cat as well. Yeah, maybe.
But also competing at the breakdown a little bit. Sale went in fairly quickly with their traditional, we're going to hammer one over the top and then going to keep hammering you out wide. And Armand being in there, it slowed the ball up a hell of a lot for them. And just meant that they were playing a slightly different game to the one they wanted to. And yeah, Rob Dupreez is shit.
Yeah, I mean, I've been firmly put in my place when we did that ranking of the tens. I must admit, I got Dupreez. Dupreez, we're going to just call him Dupreez all game. I think that's probably fair.
There's one thing I know, it's what a shit 10 looks like.
And you got it nailed on, Doug.
It's like goalkeepers that wear tracksuit bottoms. If your ten's got pubes for hair, then it's probably shit.
He looks like a real shit Seth Rogen, doesn't he? Let's talk about that first
three.
Yeah. That first sort of 5 minutes, the Tuilagi yellow card, where Richard Chapstick, as detailed by Premiership Rugby, caught one in the chops. And as you say, Phil had to go off. And then within a minute of that, Cowan Dickey goes over. Sale never really recovered from that, Ben, did they? And it was all a little bit, well, they were just a bit timid, a bit tepid.
You know full well I haven't watched any rugby this weekend, Russ. But,
I do.
Well, it doesn't help, does it, having a yellow card after 4 minutes? And it looked like, to be honest, both teams did struggle to defend the sort of tap and goes from close range. But, you know, my main takeaway from it is the Channel 5 highlights aren't very good.
But is that Mark Durden Smith?
Yeah, I mean, the presenters are brilliant, but it was literally 5 minutes of each game. So, and because there were quite a few tries in both games, I can't really go into much more detail than that.
That's fair.
Although I didn't think that was a yellow card, to be quite honest.
I got to say, Ben, my analysis of this situation is that as a self-proclaimed nicest man in Cornish podcasting, the least you could have done for the two most important games of the season so far is watch more than just the highlights.
Well, I mean, I'm not self-proclaimed. I've never called myself that. That's Russ. But
I literally watched the games while I was filming a test match. What's your excuse?
I think that says more about you than it does anyone else, Doug.
It says more about the test match that he's filming than it does anyone else.
All night, because he got a nice rugby shirt and I didn't.
So just for the listeners and for Chris, obviously, it was Ben's birthday on Sunday, the big 4-0. And I thought it'd be a nice idea to chip in and we could get him a little present. And with it being a Lions year, we got him a Lions jersey. Lovely stuff. But unfortunately, it was Doug's 40th birthday 2 years ago, and he hasn't forgotten the fact that he didn't get a present, and he's a bit bitter about it. So, you know, and he will continue.
I think you're all cunts.
Well, and he will hold a grudge.
Incidentally, Russ has also sent us all calendar notifications for his 40th, just so that we don't forget. And one for a month beforehand. Present for Russ.
Unfortunately, there's no good tour.
12 sleeve of top flight golf balls.
those top flights are worth their weight in gold, mate, I tell you. Right, anyway, let's get back to the game. The Tuilagi yellow card. Chris, what do you reckon? All the Rob Baxter rhetoric in the week.
In the current guidelines, he should have been sent off because it was reckless collision with the head. And but I don't think it was. I don't think it was. It was clumsy. And for me, having played at a decent level, I've found it really difficult all year because ultimately, you have to be a little bit reckless because it's no longer contact; it's collision. And you know, the coaches refer to it as collision. If you're colliding with 17, 18, and 19 stone men, you have to launch yourself at it. And if there's a slight deviation, Tuilagi wanted to put his shoulder on, was wrapping his arm, Capstick stepped, and he caught him. It's going to be really difficult to legislate for this because little Timmy's mum sees it and goes, I don't want my boy to play rugby. And you've got this CTE thing going on. They've got to do something, but what they're doing at the moment is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've said it before, I'll say it again, fuck Timmy.
fuck Timmy's mum.
I agree, but the problem is rugby's got an expanse. This is a big topic now. And having been in the commercial side at Chiefs for 6 years, rugby's trying to expand and grow the fan base. You know, when I played at the county ground in the first instance, 3,000 was a big crowd. When I finished, 10,000 was a big crowd, which means in the last 8 years, there've been 7,000 people out or 8,000 people have rocked up. My maths is shit there, by the way. Sorry, my maths is never strong.
There's all those head collisions.
Judging by what Chris said, you've probably got CTE. So. Yeah.
I was never knocked out. I've got a really thick skull and I've got a load of fat on my head. It's like evolutionary. It's really weird. Or I've got paper skin. I've had like 120 stitches in my face, all from being shit at fighting. But I've never been knocked out. I used to win fights because people had punched me in the face. And I just stand there and go, why'd you do that? And they go, fucking hell, I can hit him. And he didn't move. But they're trying to grow the game. They're trying to get a greater support base. They're targeting the kids. and somebody in RFU Towers have gone, we've got to stop these big shots. I think this is rugby union. I think there's so many where you go, it's a rugby incident. And I'm gutted for Big Dave, and I'm gutted for Skins, because they're both going to miss. Dave would almost definitely have been a nod for England this year in the summer, and Skins is going to miss Scotland. And you just think, was there any malice? Was there any intent? No. Could they have done anything differently? In Skins' case, absolutely categorically no. And he's now going to miss international caps. And you just think, what a bag of shit. But
Phil, just going back a week then, very, very quickly, is the fact that I've been thinking about this. Did Sam Skinner get a red card because Dave Ewers didn't? I can't help going back to the fact that Carl Dixon looked at that at halftime and went, oh shit, I fucked up there. If somebody else gets one in the second half, they've got to walk regardless. And it was almost, you know, they cited Dave Ewers, and then they'd already sent Sam Skinner off. They've already sent Skinner off, so they had nowhere else to go. And the article in The Guardian today, was it today, the article in The Guardian?
Michael Allnwyn.
Around the punishments and all of that sort of stuff. Actually, you know, maybe that's where it needs to be looked at rather than the on-field stuff.
Well, and I think the way you originally led into it, Russ, was about Baxter's comments. And I don't think Baxter's comments were that Tua Lange should have been sent off. It's actually the inconsistencies in the basis that what he did was not really any different to what either of the guys did last week. I think subconsciously, you're probably right, Russ. I don't think it was a conscious thing from Dixon, but you're probably right that there's a bit of subconscious evening up. But the point is that you can go and do something pretty bad and you plead guilty to it and you've got a clean record and you get a 3-week ban, or you slightly mistime something and you say, actually, we're not convinced that should have been a red card in the first place, and you get a 4-week ban as a result. And the inconsistencies of it is where it's wrong, because rugby seems to think that it has this higher legal responsibility when it comes to disciplinary actions, to the point where it applies laws in a more stringent way to the way the court system does. I mean, the courts would have looked at that, whether you plead guilty or not, and gone, well, you've done something slightly wrong, so we'll give you a slapped wrist. We're not going to double it because you plead not guilty. That's not the way it works. But and coming back to the whole CTE thing, Chris, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Part of the biggest problem is the people that are suing PRL, RFU, whoever, on the CTE thing, they were playing 10 years ago. And since then, a lot has changed and the game has got a lot safer. And actually, if you make changes, you've got to give it time to see whether it makes a difference or not. There was a chat on a Twitter group that we've got about the trial in the championship, looking at lowering the tackle height, showed a 36% increase in concussions. But that occurred because they only looked at it over 4 games. It's not enough time to look at it. And the changes have happened. But the biggest 2 changes they could do are play fewer games. And if you do get concussed, give you a decent period off. Don't have it that you can come back and play 8 days later. And pretty much any doctor would say, yeah, that's sensible.
Yeah, agreed.
Go on, Doug.
I'd just like to pick up on the point about how Exeter's crowds have gone from 3,000 to 10,000.
Well, 12 now, isn't it?
Well, I'd like to see statistics in how participation has dropped from grassroots rugby, because the only place you're going to get those 8,000 fans is from people that are already rugby that no longer play.
I would tend to agree. If you look at some of the comments on message boards and what have you, some of them people don't have a fucking clue about rugby.
What do we actually want?
They're just there because there's a few thousand that are floating, and there's nothing wrong with this. This is the nature of professional sport. There's people that are going for the occasion. And they just want to cheer with the crowd. They want to
So they go for the occasion, whether people are getting lamped in the nut or not.
Yeah.
So why?
But this is the point. Is no. We need to have a real deep dive into. We're going off topic here, but it's the same as sin bin in props that are shit.
I said this a few weeks ago, right? Props getting sin binned because they're shit, or because the rest of their scrum's shit, but they're the one that's getting binned for it. It doesn't make any sense. Why not bin the second row?
Oh, mate, because second row is a race.
Obviously.
But it's just... The difficult thing is intent. You know, did any of those lads intend to get it wrong? No, they were trying to put a big shot on. But it's just... It's the legislation after the fact and these boys getting banned for a period. That's what really makes it suck.
A bad tackle jumps out on the screen, doesn't it? Even if you're watching it on the telly, you can see them and you know they're going back. Whereas, take the Skinner one for an example. When the video referee comes in, you couldn't have told where that tackle happened and how far they were going back, because apart from the one angle, there'd look nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's Frankenstein's monster, because rugby players of today are just so far removed from even my generation. They're just thoroughbred animals. I was up at the club today and just mooching about, and I sort of saw Franny. I mean, Thomas Francis is like a human, only bigger. Like, genuinely, he is fucking ginormous. And you don't realise how big these men are till you get close. I'm a big fella, but they're just on another level. They're ginormous. And they're thoroughbred.
And it's the athleticism, isn't it? It's the speed, the athleticism, the fitness, the strength. Yeah. I mean, we'll get on to Joe Marler in a minute. You've only got to look at his performance at the weekend today.
Are they a bit more cunty?
No, they're less.
less cunty.
I got five sin bins in my first year at Chiefs, all of them for throwing punches. And
cunty.
And Rob, hero. Rob actually brought the evolution in about 2010, where he said, right, if it kicks off, grab people and pull them close to you, because they can't punch you hard. And you can't throw a punch, just pull them in close. Whereas back in the day, you went for it. And I was at Dick Manley's funeral today with John Baxter, Paul Baxter, Trevor Harris, proper hard men of Exeter Chiefs. And they were reminiscing about, I mean, rugby back in the 70s and 60s, people just used to fight. Literally, they just go and have a fight.
That's what I love it.
Although you talk about cunty, sorry, I have to butt in. The best bit of cuntiness in the universe was in the Quinns Bristol game. Joe Marler, about 10 minutes in, gets tackled on the Bristol 22 and he goes to push the ball back on the ruck and he pushes it deliberately into Sinclair's face. And then when the ball rolls away, he drops his elbow into Sinclair's face, and it was subtle as anything. I thought, well done. And I around the video, I showed it to my wife and said, look at that. He's been an absolute shit house. Amazing.
Like, the amount of times I've seen him like grabbing people's earlobes or just like pulling their beard and stuff like that at the bottom of rucks, it's...
I've got one for you. So I didn't play much in the Premiership because I wasn't really good enough. But on one occasion, I came off the bench against Quinns and I did a tackle and I swung round and headbutted Jim Scaisbrook and split my head open. And there was about 5 minutes left in the game and the doc came on and said, look, you're going to need stitches, but if I take you off, you ain't going back on. And because I didn't play much, said, well, can I stay on? So he chucked a load of Vaseline in my head and strapped it up. And about 2 minutes later, I got stuck in the bottom of a ruck and Marla was on top of me and he must have been a kid. And he just put his elbow in my head where his hole was and just started rubbing his elbow. And I was sat there going, mate, why are you being such a dick? And I've disliked him ever since then.
You're my pal for that.
I've listened to his podcast and I've grown to like him now. I think he's all right. But up until then, I honestly thought he was an absolute dick. And I used to watch him go, what a dick.
Yeah, but he's the kind of dick that you'd rather was on your side than the opposition. Because his whole game is about putting people off. And he's the best that there is at it.
Yeah, he gets well, of this generation. The Exeter Chiefs aficionados might remember Danny Port, who is the ultimate prop, an absolute, just a horrible human being. He used to sit in the change room and say, I'm like a weed, I thrive on neglect.
You say like a horrible human being. That is like such a badge of honour. They are the best people, aren't they?
I would go into rucks head first with my elbows out and Porty would be parallel with me, feet first, piling in. he was on another level. Can I give you an anecdote on Porty?
The more the better.
Go.
So we were playing. I wasn't playing. Chiefs were playing Worcester. It was the year before me, and Worcester had loads of money and they had six ways and it was in the Championship and everyone was going on about Worcester being amazing and they had Kingsley Jones back rower, nuggety Welshman, and he was chops it off like he was the big man, and someone had hit him and he'd split his head and he'd gone off for stitches and he'd come back on and he was like, "You can't hurt me. I'm indestructible." About a minute later, Porty got him in a maul, grabbed the stitches in his head, ripped them all out, and went, I can fucking hurt you.
Jesus Christ.
It took him off. That's a horrible story, but honestly, as rugby players, it was ace. So little Timmy didn't like that.
I don't mean this disparagingly, but you can't imagine Dino Lamb doing that, can you?
No. But modern day players can't do it. There's videos and everything, and it doesn't happen. But, you know, every generation thinks, I look at the top generation now, they're so much better.
Yeah.
They're better because they're better athletes. They don't have time to be messing about. Marlowe's a bit of a throwback because he has got a little bit of naughtiness about him. But there you go. I just needed to give you that Porty one because it's just, if you're into rugby, it's funny as.
To be fair to Marlowe, he can scrummage pretty well as well.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay, Lewis, let's get slightly back to the Exeter Chiefs sale game, which, you know, it's
fine. To the 21st century.
Yeah.
It was never in doubt. Sale had nothing to give. They were depowered. Chiefs are like the Borg. If you take one away, a replicant comes along. Resistance is futile. Your destruction is inevitable.
Yeah, we're going to take out the nailed-on-line starting fullback and bring in Jack Noel, who was absolutely unbelievable for first game back. Like his catching technique is just like picture perfect. Draw a picture of how do you challenge a high ball under contest. It's Jack Noel.
The one he took on the try in the dead ball area was phenomenal.
Retreating back
over his shoulder.
You know what I saw from Jack Noel, and he played 15 in that under 20s World Cup winning side with Slady at 10, with Anthony Watson on the wing. Yeah. And obviously, they obviously saw that in him. I've said for a fair amount of time, he has got all the attributes to be a world class fullback. The way he attacks the high ball with intent is something that the last person I've seen do that is Mike Brown, especially for England, because he goes into that situation in such a dominant fashion. That's where Elliot Daly and others struggle, because they tend to be really passive in that situation. They wait for the ball to come to them. But his judgment and to go and attack that ball, and that decision for Rob Baxter to play Jack Noel at 15 over Stuart Hogg, who, you know, is one of your marquee signings. He's you know, world renowned, one of the biggest players, you know, in the world at that position. You know, could have come in. It could have come back to bite him in the ass. But because it's Rob Baxter, he's calculated. He obviously thought about methodically.
I've got to further elaborate. How good is Nolsey to come in, having not played for weeks, and be one of the best players on, like?
He's phenomenal.
If I hadn't played for 3 or 4 weeks, I'd be absolute village for at least a week while I got my eye in. And he comes straight in and he's just shit up.
He's phenomenal. And with the game that Sale wanted to play, obviously they didn't have McGinty's sort of magic. They had to rely on that sort of territory game. And here he comes. He had to come under a lot of pressure. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Beardmore.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
We are very well. We have the usual suspects, and we also have a good friend of yours, Chris Bentley, with us as well.
Chris, how are we?
I'm very well. How's you?
Good, mate. Good.
We've been regaled with stories from days of yore, and
15 years ago. Shit.
And we've just only just sort of started talking about Sale Exeter, and we were just eulogising. No, that's not the wrong word. Is that what you do at a funeral?
It is eulogising. You can eulogise about things.
I was worried about that because I've given people posthumous awards before that are not dead, so or that are dead. I don't know. Either way,
it's certainly okay to eulogise over Sale Sharks' hopes.
Yeah, oh, well, I mean...
I think they got euthanized.
R.I.P. Sale Sharks. But we were just saying how good Jack Noel was to come in for Stuart Hogg, which was a surprise selection. But he took everything that Sale and Rob Dupree's had to throw at him.
Yeah, he did. He was awesome. And I as awesome as Noel was, I think the real story was Rob Baxter's stones in order to, you know, make that selection. Not many coaches would have done that. And I think I said it on Egg Chasers too. That's what sets him apart. The fact that he can be so objective, stand aside. He watches rugby in the most simple terms. And I think in a world where everyone's trying to overcomplicate things, they could learn a lot from how Rob Baxter operates his team.
What would Rob Baxter do?
Great question. It's a great question.
Yeah, stand your biggest mongo 5 yards from the try line and say, take a tap penalty and run at a pile of South Africans. Yeah, sure thing, coach.
I mean, that's
one of Luke Cowan-Dickie's strengths, though, is that he doesn't have the capacity to go, that doesn't sound sensible. He'll just go, yeah, go on then, I'll do that.
Look, I'm not going to talk about Luke, but his brother Tom was at the club when we first got the ice bath. And he used to, we'd all be finished training and you just hear this splash, footstep, 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 and Tom would spend about an hour just diving headfirst into the ice bath. And you're like, Tom, have you done this? And he's supposedly the clever one. And then Tom is also an unbelievably good rugby player, but he got homesick for Cornwall living in Exeter.
No.
You could take the boy out of Penzance.
Triple G, like, he kills people. Championship level, that is like, it's like GBH. Like, he's just unbelievable. But he just got homesick, had to go home.
Amazing. I was going to say, Jack Noll, like, just go back to Jack Noll, the awareness for that try. I could talk about Jack Noll all day, but the awareness for that try, they talked about it on comms, that he took charge of that situation and he saw it from, you know, 30 metres away. And he saw that Sale weren't reset and he saw that they weren't switched on. And as soon as Foley was in position, he was gone. And he literally was the only person almost on the entire pitch to react to that. It just showed his class for me.
Chiefs are a very systemized team. If you look, they have the plays, all the forwards have the plays written on their arm for three phases. When they start, so from scrums and lineouts, they know where they've got to be. And the amazing thing with Nolsey is that the Chiefs have a system. He gets the system, but he can also operate outside of it as well. And he's given the carte blanche to sort of do things. There's two or three guys that literally told, you know, this is how we're going to play. This is what we're going to do. These are the phases we're going to run. But if you sit on, you play. You do your thing, and it's testament to his ability, not only to come in cold and be one of the best three players on the field, but the fact that he can do what he does in a very regimented team.
Is that true about what? the players on the wrist? That has to be a joke.
Nope.
Really?
I don't know if I'm giving too much away, but if you look,
not at all. You carry on.
You watch the boys when they go to lineouts.
Yeah,
how all the forwards look at their left wrist.
No,
most of them have got. They've got a few phases of play written down, and they know what they're going to do, and they execute with tempo, because one of the things that teams can't defend is high tempo rugby. So if you rock up, you go to your lineup, you know exactly what you're doing. Now, if something happens, you break the line or something, all bets are off. You play heads up. But otherwise, they've got three phases structured that they will run consistently. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, I think Russ and I had a bit of a chat with Jack Yendall about it a few years ago up at a game. Can you remember that, Russ?
Yeah, Jack, or as I called him at the Premiership final, Jack
Yendall.
Jack Yendall. You led me into that, Phil. You wanted me to say that, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Okay, right. JB, obviously, thanks for joining us. Do you think that Sale shot their metaphorical bolt last week and put all of their cards on the table, so they had nowhere to go this week, especially with no AJ McGinty, no Cam Neild? Do you think it was all a bit sort of one-dimensional for Sale?
No, I don't, actually. I don't think that's what happened at all. I think that what Sale came with was the exact right strategy to beat last week's Exeter Chiefs. But, you know, you're into a game theory scenario where not only are you paid to beat the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are paid to beat you. And I think the reality of the situation is that Chiefs were just better prepared for what they expected Sale to bring. There is a clear situation here of the master. And I think Alex Hamilton is a master. But just this time around, the matchup didn't work for him.
JB,
in the toilet.
Yeah, have you climbed in a biscuit tin?
Oh, that everyone else
can he's gone. He's gone.
I think this is more a story about exactly how.
Oh, no. JB, what are you doing?
The consummate pro on his own podcast, as soon as he comes in someone else's.
Love it. Hey, he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to. The, where I was going to go. The restarts were a little bit of an issue for the Chiefs. Sale obviously sort of targeted that area to try and play high tempo when they had the opportunity. But as we said at the start, it was very much those periods of play. If they didn't execute those, the scoreline would have been vastly, vastly different. So, you know, where can Sale go from here, do you think? I mean,
Sorry, did you hear anything which I said before?
No, not at all. You disappeared down the toilet.
Right, sorry. My phone just connected to Bluetooth. So I'll start again, right? First of all, I'm going to answer your question about did Sale shoot the gun a bit too early? The answer to that is no, not at the slightest. I think the Sale team which showed up on Saturday was a perfect Sale team to try and beat the Exeter team from last week. But as much as Sanderson prepared for last week's Exeter team, Exeter were preparing for what they expected Sale to bring. And I think it's a little bit of a case of master and the apprentice. Rob Baxter is currently the master. Alex Sanderson is an incredible coach. But I just think in this one particular game, he got outcoached. And I don't have any time for the argument that, hey, we're missing AJ or we're missing whoever it is, because Exeter are missing players too. In fact, the whole point of professional rugby and having loads of people in your squad is that you're going to be missing people, except Harlequins, who seem to never be missing people. I think this is purely a story about exactly how good Exeter Chiefs are rather than anything else.
Do you not think it's a story of how good Exeter are at diagnosing oppositions and reacting
100%.
To... 100%. Yeah, I think it's more a victory for Rob Baxter and his team than the players on the pitch. They saw what Sale had to throw at them because they gave it everything last week, as we chatted about last week, lads. I think that Exeter went away from that game and thought, well, we know what they're going to do. We'll prepare for it and we'll just be better than them at it.
Yeah, there's an economic saying, which is there's no solutions, only trade-offs. And it wouldn't surprise me if when Exeter finally win the championship and we get to talk to Rob Baxter again about this one game, if he just gives us a very simplistic answer about what he thought Sale were going to do in the second game and how he counted it, I think it'll be something really, really obvious. So in the first game, it was a really obvious one, which Sale pulled out of the bag, which is we do not let Exeter play in our 22 ever because all of their points come in the 22. And lo and behold, as soon as Exeter started scoring points, where was it? In the 22. Sanderson is equally as capable as Baxter in some respects, but it just didn't come off. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Baxter will have looked at that game and said, right, we need to do X, Y, Z, and then his team go and execute that.
I think the thing with Baxter is quite often if BT catch him before half-time when they have their manager interview.
Yeah, the 20-minute coach break.
He'll have already... If Exeter aren't playing that well in that time, he'll have diagnosed what the problem is by that point. And he's usually got the stones to sort of tell the guys on the commentary what he's going to do at half time, and 9 times out of 10 that works. So I think if you give him a week, I think, yeah, you're both right, he's going to come up with a game plan. He's not going to, you know, fall into a trap that's already been sprung once, you know.
Yeah, I was once talking to a coach, right, a relatively high level coach who was doing RGC. So RGC is like the fifth region of Wales, and this coach,
JB, before you get into this, why are they called? What does RGC stand for? Because I see this. Is there anything? Because everyone always says RGC, and I'm like, what? I know the North Walians are a bit peculiar, but what is that about?
Rugby Gogledd Cymru, which means Rugby North Wales, RGC.
Right. Okay.
That's it. Yeah. You should have asked Lonsdale about that one.
Oh mate, yeah, but Lonsdale's the anti-banter. He's got nothing to say ever.
Oh, really?
genuinely, I used to have him on hospitality, and I just have to, I'd say, like, if you don't give me something, I'm going to take the piss out of you. And he'd be like, okay.
I'll do something.
Oh, fun vacuum, that man.
This coach, right, was telling me about how his team were going to play next year based on the statistics which were gathered by all the teams in the Welsh Premiership and then was distributed throughout all the teams. And I thought, you know, that's very interesting. But shouldn't you be doing your game plan based not on what you see these stats to be, but the reaction to what you think the other people will see these stats to be? And I think that Rob Baxter sort of things like that, which is, it's not, he doesn't react to what he thinks they're going to bring. He reacts to the reaction. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
Yeah, it absolutely does.
It totally does. It's also probably part of the reason why they struggled in the early years in Europe, because you just don't get that much an intimate knowledge about how the coaches are thinking. And I don't disagree with anything that you've said, JB, other than you can't honestly say that Rob Dupree is an adequate replacement for AJ McGinty. If AJ McGinty was there, then the game might have been closer. And Christ, everybody's got a salary cap that they need to stick to, apart from Saracens, obviously. But you can choose to spend that how you like, and top quality world class tens are not ten a penny. So it's not a criticism of Sale or their recruitment policy or whatever, but it was a factor that definitely played a game. And Don Armand in for Dave Ewers via somebody else is probably a better replacement than Rob Dupree for AJ McGinty. But
let's get it right, Phil. Like, when they brought Dupree in, or Dupree's, when they brought Dupree in, AJ McGinty was by no means the number one. I mean, they brought Dupree in to be number one, didn't they? He's become an integral, AJ McGinty has become an integral part of that team. Like,
but is that, that's coaching style as well, though, isn't it? Isn't it that AJ McGinty, his game plan suits the Sanderson game plan better than Dupree?
I'm not entirely sure I know what the Sanderson game plan is. I'm not being facetious there either. I really don't know what it is. Like, I don't think Sanderson coaches in the same way that Baxter does. So, you know, whereas we're talking about, systems, processes, systemized teams for Exeter. Yeah, I've been watching Sale for quite a long time now, and maybe the defence is a little bit more systemized. I honestly do not know what the attacking pattern is. To this day, I do not know. So does AJ McGinty fit the attacking pattern? I don't know if he does or not. However, I do know this. AJ McGinty, since Sanderson has arrived, he's always been a hard worker, but I think that's what Sanderson does rather than systemize a team. He makes everybody work that little bit harder, usually by inspiring them. And I can tell you now, by listening to the guy in the press conference, you finish it and you go, oh my God, I would like to now go to the gym or take cold showers or go practice my kicking or do whatever it is. So I think those are the two ways that these two coaches operate. Sanderson's all about, if you think about it, bottom up, make sure everyone is pulling their weight, make sure everyone's being the best they can be. Whereas I think Baxter's very much top down, which is, hey, look, this is the system and we'll all fit into that. So I'm not entirely sure.
There's similar rhetoric from both coaches, and a lot of coaches are starting to clue into this. Everyone's as big and as strong and as fast and as quick, but it's them top 2 inches. And there was a lot of words like emotion, and Baxter often refers to love. And these are the things that make the difference. And it's one of the big strengths of the Chiefs above everything is that they genuinely love each other, this group of guys. Like, they all want to knock about together. And Sanderson's going to engender that. You feel that he's at the beginning of a journey with Sale, and he's going to do bloody well with them, because he's got the DNA of the Northwest as well in him. And they will be a force, but it's just a year or so too early for him.
Yeah. Doug, you want in?
Yeah, I don't want to. Like, I know you played rugby for the Chiefs in the Premiership. I'm not going to sit here and say that. The whole journey with this, with that, the Sanderson speech, it boils my piss to the end of the earth. You're on a journey. Like, how long does the journey last? Diamond was on a journey. He never got there.
Genuinely, you know what I mean? It takes time to engender because they are genuinely, these guys are so, they're all, look, you can't fault the preparation that these guys go through to build themselves into absolute monsters. But you could see after 20 minutes, Sale mentally just weren't as sharp as Chiefs. Chiefs were throwing themselves into everything like absolute berserk.
We've been saying all year that Sanderson's brought in an atmosphere of like his engendered spirit.
But it takes a while to trust in that system and know that you're going to be looked after if you get it wrong or something happens. And you know, Baxter, his outspoken behaviour last week when two of his boys got in trouble, in the post-match interview, that's a coach standing behind his team. Absolutely.
I agree with you, but I also think that is something that coaches know how to do now. It's not always been the case, but
they know how to do it, but they don't do it.
Yeah.
Well,
and Rob does.
You show me a coach in the Premiership that doesn't do it.
Well, pretty much everybody else, when they've had players sent off, has not been as outspoken. I mean, every headline after that game.
Boyd does it for Saints. Bloody... Alan Partridge does it at Worcester. fella at Gloucester, I've heard do it.
Skivington.
Yeah. Quinn's Nick Evans, or that weird
Holland
manager that comes out and speaks sometimes. Yeah.
Billy Millard.
The fruit and veg manager from Tesco's. They all do it. It's all a thing now. My thing with
Sorry, can just clarify a second. What is the thing that you're referring to? Like, not throwing your players under the bus.
They all say we're on a journey. They're all say like this saying. Apparently, learnings is now a word.
Oh yeah.
You don't lose. You learn.
Yeah, yeah. You learn. You don't do. I didn't go to school to do my learnings.
The actual word learnings. Oh, learnings.
It's all utterly, utterly infuriating and bullshit.
I do agree with you.
Anything... to back your players and say that you've done the right thing when you're pumping people up the arse every week, like Exeter have been for the last 5 years, because you've got better players than everyone else. The fact is, Sale lost this game because they lost their best player. If AJ McGinty was playing, they probably would have been in it for longer. And you can back.
They're still losing.
The fact is, if your players are fundamentally less good than the players you're playing against, the chances are you're going to lose.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter what your journey is.
Yeah, but I think taking 1 of 15 away, you could see in their demeanour after 20 minutes that game Chiefs were going to win. Chiefs were always going to win.
Because probably because they knew that Rob Dupree wasn't going to get it done.
Exactly. I don't know about that.
But this is the point: top 2 inches, and this is the emotion and the care that they have. They look at, if you look left and right, and you know the bloke next to you is going to do everything. He's going to die for you. And Chiefs, man for man, there's so many teams you would take, other than probably Knowlesy and maybe Dickie, you'd probably swap players from most of the teams for Chiefs players, but as a unit...
That's what I was going to say. I was just going through 1 to 15 in my head, and most of them, you'd throw one Sale away, one Exeter's way. You wouldn't say that Maunders are better 9 than Faf.
Yeah.
Devoto against Tuilagi. This is the thing I struggle a bit with Tuilagi at Sale, is last week, I don't think they used him a single time as a crash ball. This week, I think they might have used him once, which is his real strength. They used him as a dummy 3 or 4 times, but it's almost like they've got him there, but they're scared to use him in case he breaks.
Well, especially when they had Tuilagi and Van Rensburg in the midfield, you would have thought that all they would have been doing is pumping balls straight up the middle. All day. But they didn't. Can I be slightly controversial? I don't think Sale missed AJ McGinty as much as they missed Ako van der Merwe. I genuinely think he is he offers something to that team, whether through leadership, through carrying, through just general busyness,
I don't think they had it because Exeter negated that part of their game.
I just think Sale missed Van der Merwe. I just think they genuinely missed Van der Merwe. He's been excellent for them this season. And I think they probably missed him, in my opinion, slightly more than they did McGinty, because of the way they tried to execute that game plan. Overall, an incredible game of rugby. In fact, two games of rugby against two sides.
I'm absolutely one-eyed Exeter Chiefs supporter. The Chiefs game was nowhere near the Harlequins Bristol game.
No, but they were great games in different ways. Now, yeah, let's move on to Quinns versus Bristol.
Ben would have hated Quinns.
Ben is very much a 9-6 man. Mud, at the wreck. Everybody
keep,
in that
keep everything
corner.
Very organised. That's the way to play.
I mean,
yeah, there's none of that.
Has there been, well, there's never been a more bonkers semi-final. I struggle to think of a more bonkers match this season.
Saints get Leicester.
It's the biggest comeback in Premiership history.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wasn't Bath? I thought it was like, was it all the Wasps games the biggest game comeback?
Wasps and Irish was 23 points, and Bristol Quinns was 28 points.
My God! Now I know it's more entertaining, but was it better? Was watching two horribly flawed teams exposing their flaws really?
Yeah, I don't think it was more entertaining or better. I found it less entertaining.
The biggest confusion for me was why he took Atwood off.
Yeah,
like you, all you've got to do is just take the heat out of the game. Land a couple of mauls, give the ball to keep Atwood, land it, and just stand there stand there for 2 minutes. Do
but that's
ball.
That's where Bristol and their game management. Quinns had their tails up in early in that second half. They scored two tries, and all Bristol had to do was just keep the ball for a bit, go through like Sale or Exeter would have done. Just keep it tight, just rumble through some phases, buy a couple of penalties, and away you go. But they continued to go through the. And I'm trying to think, arrogance from Bristol's part to think, well, we'll just keep playing the way we're going to play. And that was their undoing, you know, at the end of it, because they kept trying to go wide very, very early on in the piece. And Quinns were ready for them. They were at every single turn after that first half an hour, Quinns were ready for them. And Bristol, from the point Max Malins dropped that kick, Bristol did. They look lost.
I think Pat Lam lost it, in all honesty. I think he panicked very early in that second half and started making some fairly rash substitutions that didn't necessarily make sense. But you said it, Russ, the first half an hour, Quinns were so unbelievably narrow. And I think part of the reason they were unbelievably narrow is as good as players like Dom Brandt and Kenningham and... who's the other one? Lorday are at parts of their game. They are flipping slow in defence to get round the pitch as a back three. It was one of the tries. I think it might have been Morahan's try. It came straight from a line out. Lorday was at the back of the line out. Ball went to the back, and he stood watching the line out while the ball gets shipped out down to the 12 channel. If he's drifting out into that channel like he should have done, the rest of the back line drifts out one more and you don't have that overlap.
Explains why Exeter let him go, right?
Well, Baxter obviously didn't want him to... Didn't
salary
see him
cap.
As part
that was a,
of
that was a,
the long-term
say,
future.
It was a salary
100%,
cap.
100% salary cap, because he was getting offers and Chiefs were, we ain't going to pay it to you because we've got to getting that money.
But if he was that good, they'd have paid him, right?
You got Sam Simmons.
Yeah. But if he was that good,
you'd like to keep him. Like, we'd love to keep you, but we've got this kid that's going to play for the British Lions.
Yeah.
So
yeah, right.
But it was the same with it was Malin's first try, scrum ball, and who was it? Urine makes a dummy. Kerr follows him, which I mean, Healy said that was Kerr's fault for not staying in the block, but. Your job as a number six on a 5 metre scrum with a tight blindside is to nail that number eight if he picks the ball up. And he was still bound when Hughes was passing the ball. And I think that's part of the reason why Quinns were defending so narrow is because they have to. And Bristol went, that's fine, we'll just go round you. And then Pat Lam, as I say, I think he lost it. I think he lost control and went and made a load of rash decisions of who to switch in and out.
It looked like all his leaders, because Luatua was gone and
Piatow
should have. Someone put the elbow into Piatow's face.
Yeah, HIA.
Excited. It was. I don't know why nobody spotted it. I was like, someone's getting sent off there.
Yeah, I got the same there actually.
I've forgotten who it was, but it was like a proper elbow raised. Bosh. Good night.
On a carry, just
And it was
extended
like,
arm.
He's in trouble there. and no one picked up on it. I was amazed.
That's the main problem with the way the game's refereed at the moment, isn't it? There's five of those incidents every game that don't get picked up.
But they're not high tackles.
Head snaps back, you get a sending off.
So just talking about the reason why Quinn's was so narrow. The reason, if you mean on defence, yeah, okay, I'm with you. I also thought they were very narrow on attack as well. And it boiled down, for me, the fact they couldn't go over the game line. And then it was like they needed to relearn what rugby 101. If you can't go over the game line, well, that's one thing. You then need to take care of your ruck. And they weren't taking care of any of the rucks. They were getting turned over within two or three phases. And without the momentum going forward, they just got lost. And the polar opposite happened to Bristol in the second half, which I love, actually, because for all of the offloading and, you know, fancy stuff which both teams do, it's predicated on one fundamental thing. Basic rugby, get over the game line and then clear your breakdown. It's dead easy.
But the old saying, you earn your right to go wide, don't you? You suck a defence in, you get quick ball, you go wide, you go round them. Whereas, like, Bristol of this nasty habit, and Leicester nearly exposed them for it a couple of weeks ago. Exeter actually did it extremely well when they played him at Ashton Gate a few weeks before that, when they just counter-rucked them all over the park. They just exposed, they said, well, okay, we're going to let you go wide, but as soon as you go wide, we're going to hit you hard. And I think that, you know, Bristol's insistence on being whether it's unable or unwilling to change that, to go through some phases to then go wide, which, you know, is essentially been their undoing in the end. Ben, you want in?
I was just going to say, I think we probably touched on this in last week, you know, in between saying Harlequins were going to get absolutely battered and that Bristol were best in 13 of the 15 positions across the field. We did also say about that Leicester game where the back three literally ran everything back, and that almost got them in trouble against Leicester. And, you know, Quins are a much more potent attacking threat than Leicester at the moment. And it, you know, it did cost them then. And it's cost them in this game as well. But still a surprise, I think, judging on our predictions from last week. Yeah,
absolutely. But where it cost Bristol, where you say about running the back three, running everything back, where it cost them is that when running it back isn't the best option, their tactical kicking in that position, in that situation, isn't very good.
Do you know when they did become a good tactical kicking team? Both of them. The first 3 minutes of the extra
extra time.
It was amazing to watch them both turn into, I don't know, Warren Gatland's Wales for 3 minutes. Yeah.
You know, the type of rugby that Bristol probably should have been playing early in that second half that they did in that extra time.
I've seen it a number of times, actually, where Bristol get out to a really good start and then run out of ideas. Once your position adjusts, there's no answer to an adjustment from Bristol.
I'll be honest with you. There's a perverse sense of joy because Bristol, like Saracens, have got humility and honesty on their stand, and they're so far from humble and honest. It really pleased me that humble Pat Lamb, who got found out the previous week lying, his team were all acting like kings of the walk, cocks of the walk, and then they totally got their arses felt.
There was quite a lot on Twitter as well after that Pat Lamb incident, where a lot of Bristol fans were saying how that showed that they were mentally winners and they were definitely going to win the Premiership this season, and backfired a little bit.
They pretty much handed Quinn's their first try. JB, you go ahead.
Just to go back to Chris's thing about Pat Lamb, you know, being found out a bit. I'll just add a little bit more context to this, because I was in the press room for Bristol last week. The week after the Leicester game. And I do enormously respect Pat Lamb. And I think it's important to point this out at the outset, that the negatives, which he undoubtedly has, and as Chris pointed out, were on display for everyone to see, do not outweigh the positives. The guy is still a brilliant coach. There's no two ways about it. But he did display a different side to him, which I didn't particularly like. And one of the things he said to me when I asked him a question. So I asked him, you know, we'll just go back a step. He revealed that the RFU are launching an inquiry into what happened on the sidelines at the Tigers. And then he followed that up with, I'm delighted that they're launching an inquiry because when all the facts come out, you know, we can see this in context exactly what it all means. And I'll be proved right. And I'm thinking, no, you won't, because we know what all the facts are. We saw it on.
We watched it live, Pat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like when someone says, oh, we need to investigate this abusive tweet. No, you don't. You just read the tweet. You know, there's literally no investigation needed. So, Pat Lam's delighted about this. But actually, what he meant to say is he's delighted about it because he now no longer needs to answer any questions. So after that, people are hammering away with questions. Sorry, I won't answer that. I won't answer that. So when I asked him a question, I thought it was really interesting. The first thing that he said was, sorry, who are you? I was like, oh, right, okay, fair enough. And I really disliked the fact that although he had an inquiry going on, which is obviously going to talk about the laws of the game and were they adhered to, he could have quite easily have said, I treated Ian Tempest badly. I will never do that again. And it's below the standards that we set for ourselves at Bristol Bears. And if you'd done that, I would have forgiven him basically everything which happens in the heat of the moment. Because in the heat of the moment, anything can happen. But the easy thing in the world would be to say, yeah, I was wrong with Ian Tempest. And that was it. That would be it. I don't need to ever hear about this story ever again.
Yeah. But you said, like Chris said, the humility, the honesty and integrity that they have at Saracens, you know, the going alongside what the guys at Bristol sort of try and stand for and try and portray, it just flies in the face of all. And don't get me wrong, I don't follow rugby because everybody's got honesty and integrity. People want to see winners. People want to see them going into bat for their teams. But equally, you want to see...
It's like something out of The Simpsons. You've got to scrap likes in to win. Every inch matters. But if you get found out in a lie, as JB says, put your hand up and go, do you know what? I was being a dick then, and I'm sorry. Right, we can move on that. That's fine. But the fact that he doubled down, it was quite sweet that his team got pumped.
Yeah, I agree.
Everyone's honesty and integrity until they realise how much their win is.
Just on the honesty and integrity thing, by far the most interesting thing about Sanderson, which I found out so far, like all of his chats are really interesting, all of his walking up mountains are really interesting, all of that, super interesting, yada, yada, yada. But the one thing which really perked my interest was how he speaks about Harlequins, because he truly and deeply hates them. There's no hiding it. And that's a little bit of like the mask slipping. He's talking about love and brotherhood, and then Harlequins show up and he batters them. It's like, yeah, don't understand them, don't like them, never have them.
Harlequins is the complete antithesis of the coal miner that is Exeter Chiefs and what Sale are becoming, which is it's all about the group. Whereas Harlequins are like, fuck it, Danny Kerr's amazing with Marcus Smith. Give him the ball.
We'll have that 8, 9, 10 access and everyone else could just slot right in.
Yeah.
Look, everyone knows how I feel about Harlequins, but what I will say is that if they end up becoming more like Nick Evans, it won't be a bad thing.
Yeah. How do you feel about Harlequins? Tell me.
I fucking hate them. Because
why?
Because there's some protecting my job stuff going on here, because there's certain players that don't treat the media or the camera.
Ooh.
With the respect that they should probably get. Or just the media in general, with the respect they get. And it's quite funny that they're now using that to their advantage, using that very platform to their advantage. I think that's wrong. But I've had a steak with Nick Evans, and he's a lovely bloke. So.
Edited to save Doug's job.
So next time...
I'll be stood right next to you. We'll, two of us and one of him, we got him on.
Yeah, yeah. I will film it.
Chris, that'll be one and a half men.
you fat cunt.
But what I will say, like, so...
Leave that in.
Be like Lord of the Rings, wouldn't it?
I'll leave that bit in. What an incredible individual performance from a front row forward for 95 minutes.
He was
it was unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'll be honest, it was absolutely phenomenal, totemic, Goliath-like. However, a pound to a piece of shit, he's on toast on Saturday after about half an hour.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, is everyone, I remember the first time Chiefs made it to the Premiership final, and Baxter tells the story how the lads did a lap of honour and they were all excited because they were going to the final. Quinn's emotionally and physically, they're going to start hard. They'll have a good 15 minutes. They'll all think they're good. And then the Chiefs machine will start to go through the gears and they're going to pump them.
Yeah, I think it could well be the ultimate in sort of boa constriction.
It's going to be anticlimactic is where I'm at. I think there's going to be a 10,000 in the stadium. Quins will start with a lot of thunder and then they will blow a gasket as they realise that for 80 minutes, just a bunch of mongs are just going to pile into them.
do you not think it'll be the same as the Wasps final last year?
No.
I think Chiefs were a bit cagey in the Wasps final last year because they'd had a big game the week before. But I think Quins might put Esther Hazen back in, but it was Tapuai. It was Tapuai going to get suspended for putting the elbow into Piatau.
Is Esther Hazen back from his ban? Is he unbanned now?
He's unbanned. He's ready to go, mate. Mm.
Yeah. Well, that gives them 8, 9, 10, 12 then for Quins. Yeah. And, you know, we say Tyrone Green.
Chiefs player of the season has been Ollie Devoto.
Yeah, he's been class.
Yeah. To be fair, I thought Marchand was decent on Saturday as well.
Mm.
Do you know, here's just a little tangential piece of information for you. Just to mention that then. Ollie Devoto and Woodburn came from Bath in the same year.
Yeah.
And the year that they came over, Woodburn had won Young Player of the Year and Ollie Devoto had won Players Player of the Year and Bath still let them go. What idiots.
And incidentally, that was also the first year we started recording Mall Over Podcast.
There you go.
And Bath fan here, totally agree.
So I think that if Tuilagi and Van Rensburg and a massive, even if he is slightly smaller version of the Dupree twins, don't get any change out of the Exeter midfield, Esther Hazen's a great player, but I can't see him being the difference.
Yeah, and Slady's massively increased his defence. But, I mean, Devoto is just... His consistency is unbelievable.
He's a top three player every week.
Yeah.
He might not be man of the match, but he's in the top three every week.
Yeah. It's funny because all of the chat this season around centres, especially English qualified centres, has been around Piers O'Connor, you know, who's been playing well for Bristol. There has not enough been said about Ollie Devoto back in an England shirt. It baffles me.
And I'm going to throw this out there. Sam James at Sale, outside centre. Yeah. He's another. He just doesn't look the part, and he doesn't look the part, but he's fucking good.
I mean,
I wonder whether. So, the Bristol and Sale players have been added to the squad today, or been announced today, who are joining the England squad, and Piers O'Connor's name was not on that list.
I'd
be very much surprised if Ollie Devoto's name is not on that list. I think he'll be joining up with England.
Depends, doesn't it? Depends if Eddie's seen enough of him and thinks, no, actually, not for me. Not the right type of role. And I suspect that might be the case, actually. Because what would he do? Like, he doesn't replace the big ball carriers. He doesn't replace Farrell. So what is he there to do?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we all know he's got more passports than Jason Bourne. So, you know, he can do whatever he wants, can't he?
Mm. Yeah. Is Devoto not dual qualified for anyone else?
Oh, Devoto's not, no. Devoto's capped.
He's capped.
Is he? What, a full England cap?
Yeah.
When he was at Bath, he got 3 or 4, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm sure he was a replacement 10 at one point.
Well, he played 10 for Bath quite a bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did play 10 for Bath. The only game I remember him playing in a white shirt was throwing a glorious assist to Sam Burgess's knee, which then kneed on and scored a try.
He played two games, 2016 Six Nations, came off the bench against Wales, and I don't know when his second game was. England's opening match in the 2020 Six Nations.
Yeah.
2020?
20.
No.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was selected as substitute against France. Obviously, didn't get off the bench.
We're on the same Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
That was when we lost to France. That's when Furbank played at fullback, wasn't it?
Yeah. And
I was at Doug's house.
You think he might be kind of Eddie Jones' cup of tea, though, don't you? Because he's got a big boot and he's got a bit of size to him. He reminds me a little bit, and I say a little bit, of Stirling Mortlock.
I tell you what, he's got minimal banter as well. I had him on hospitality. Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
There's some of the lads have got ace crack, but he was.
Are we on a scale of Cowan Dickey to Lonsdale?
Yeah.
Where does Ollie Devoto sit?
Well, my last game running hospitality at Chiefs was New Year's Eve against Leicester, and I had Devoto and Townsend, and they just didn't want to give me anything. And I just had to hoe into Townsend because he hasn't got a four head, he's got a five head. He's called the fetus or the prawn because he doesn't look like
I do know there was a guy, a back row player called Joe Bierman, Chris. You probably remember Joe Bierman.
I know Joe Bierman. He's a very good ball player.
He was a very, very good ball player. But when he went to the Ospreys from the Dragons, they used to call him Prawn. And they, when asked why, he said, well, I've got a good body, but a bad head.
the Welsh lads, I've got involved with the Welsh lads late in my career. The banter is savage. Nothing is sacred. They are unbelievable.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so have you ever heard of the High Performance Podcast?
Yes.
Okay, so very, very good, good podcast. And the sports psychologist who's on that, if that's what he is called, Damien. Do you know the guy that I'm referring to?
Yeah, I read it. He did a book. What was his book? I read it.
The Barcelona Way. Don't talk about that.
The Barcelona Way, that was it. Very good book.
Do you know the story about the Barcelona Way book?
I don't know the story about it, but I really enjoy how he talks about putting teams together. You don't want engineers. You don't want to have all high performers because they'll all kill each other. You've got to find that magical mix. You've got to have a commonality. I thought it was a cracking book.
Well, it probably was a cracking book. It's probably one of the best books that he's never written because it's no longer been sold because he got done for plagiarism. And it's one of the best apologies that I've ever seen, which was, I stole the work of Daniel Pink and I reserve, and I apologise unreservedly. And none of this nonsense like, I'm sorry if you're offended or I'm sorry that you feel that way. It's like, yep, busted. And that'll be that. And he's moved on. Anyway, the point I was going to make was
that's amazing. And he's now made a career out of it because he's like Boris Johnson, isn't it? He's told a lie, but then he moves on real fast and no one notices.
Just apologise and move on. This is exactly, I don't know some people who can't apologise. It costs you nothing. Costs you nothing. And if you're wrong, you're wrong. It makes no difference. So that's why I quite like the guy because he's like, yeah, okay, the most embarrassing thing in my life has just happened, but got it wrong. I'll move on. But he's actually been around my house to do a rugby league podcast with some of the league boys. And he was talking about the banter in rugby league circles. And from what I could tell, the banter, particularly in St. Helens Rugby League, was so intense. I don't think he could understand how these guys even performed as a team. Like, it made no sense to him whatsoever. I think he's very much of the opinion that you all have to be like Saracens and love each other and send each other Father's Day cards and that kind of stuff.
You've been playing in teams long enough. Like, that is the ultimate love. When you are able to be that comfortable with people, that is like the higher echelon of love. When you can start going on about banging someone's mum or, you know, hanging out the back of their sister or whatever it might be, right?
That's exactly right.
You can take it without whacking them. Then
that sounds like Chelsea in the mid-90s with John Terry there.
You're only supposed to say it, you're not supposed to do it.
That's exactly my point. All of this stuff is lost, isn't it? If you make a list of the five people that you're the most awful to, not on Twitter, then you'll probably get your five best mates. It doesn't surprise me that the Welsh lads are so savage to each other, because I think it's like an integral part of being a team.
It was a vets tour. and it was Ian Gough, and his missus had just sort of said how he'd been beating her up or something. Any time he did anything, about three of the lads just dove for cover and said, "Not me too, Goughy, not me too." And it's like it was the headline of like the Western Morning, the Sunday Sun, and literally for the whole week, if he did anything, lads were just jumping everywhere, and if he was talking to girls. They got to go, "Are you all right? Do you need a hand? Are you okay?" And you're just like, fucking hell, like, this is happening now. He's got kids and it's all going off. And I was like, surely they've got something sacred. Nothing.
Which is the best way, right? I don't think that is the best way.
But again, this comes back to the point we were talking about earlier, Doug. If you've got that tenure and you've been together for a long period of time, you can do these things. And it has to be built. You can't, you know, this is where Sanderson will get better because he'll have the time to build into it.
Will it make his players better, though?
I think it will. I genuinely think it will.
Is it that small percentage that you eke out of people because of that sort of relationship? It's like you say, the top 2 inches. It's that somebody will be willing to lay that little bit more on the line.
Are we saying Worcester would be exponentially better if they just had a bit more banter?
No, it's the Dave Brailsford effect, isn't it?
The Exeter's changing room is known as a snake pit, bite or get bitten. And I can't say any more about it, but there's some pretty serious shit goes down there.
Oh, really?
So
if you don't broadcast it, I can talk to you about it, but I can't broadcast it.
So, in the Chiefs changing room, Chris, next to everybody's name, they've got a little flag if they've played internationally for that country.
On a match day, when you're getting ready for a match day, yeah.
Yeah, so... I noticed that there was one player who didn't have a flag next to his name who had played internationally and had a quick word and mentioned it to him after the game. And he was like, "Shit, don't tell anybody else that. Otherwise, I'm never going to hear the end of that."
Yeah.
But yeah, a certain Mr. Moon never got any recognition for his England games.
Oh, bloody hell, I didn't know that. Yeah. I'll get into it. How are you men doing for playing? Do any of you men play? Because you know JB's turning out in Mooney's test.
No, Russ, you are not.
If there is a space, right, if there is any way, shape or form that I could get on that pitch for even the smallest amount of time, I am in.
What position would you be playing?
Full back or centre. But more than likely fullback. When I mentioned this to JB a few weeks ago, what was it you said, JB? Charlie Hodgson, Mike Tindall or James Hook, good luck.
And it is the rest of the world because there's one back row spot in Mooney's 15 and then the world, you've got like Rory Jackson, Dave Lewis, Rich Bolt, Charlie Hodgson, Tom James, Ron McAtee.
Boaty playing, is he?
Say again?
Boaty's playing, is he?
Ricky Boaty, yeah.
I would just like Russ to play so that when he walks into the changing rooms, everyone just looks at him and go, "Who is this?
Who the fuck is that?"
No, did you win a competition?
Chris, Dan Conroy. Dan, it's Dan Cole from the 90s.
Dan Cole doesn't look fit.
Are you going to play, Chris?
But I'm not playing. I'm broken biscuits now. I'm water boy.
So, when are you up for a game in October? We're doing a bit of a... We're doing a bit of a charity
rugby
game.
Rugby against cancer, Mallover Invitational.
I'm more than happy to run water. I'm more than happy to be in the boat race, take the piss, but I am retired.
There we go. 9th of October, I think the week after the Ben Moon game in Newquay. We're gonna have an old school rugby port at halftime, beers afterwards, singing, raising money for rugby against cancer. That's what we're going
to do. October 9th. All right.
Done.
You can sit out on the wing. The ball never gets out to the wing. You'll be fine.
No, I'd be fear, but I'm frightened. If I'm on the savannah, I shit myself. I need to be
Need to be at the watering hole, not on
There's a video of me on YouTube somewhere where I get the ball and you see the fear in my eyes. I do like a 50-yard run. It's championship days against Carve. I am petrified. I don't know what the fuck to do. I'm running at people to try and get tackled because I just don't like it.
I've got to say, when Chris asked me to play this game, I had a little bit of a crisis because he asked me, "What position do you normally play?" Thinking, well, last season, I was playing a lot of tighter prop, but there's no way I'm playing as Ben Moon in the Ben Moon in a testimonial. So that now leaves second row. And I bumped into Dean Schofield the other day, who I believe is playing second row, right? Is that confirmed?
I've asked him. He hasn't come back to me. If you've got details on him, I sent him an email. The fucker never came back. And
Oh, really?
I've never... I've never I've never played against Scully, but everyone that knows him and knows me says, you'd get on dead well, you two. And I saw him at a vets tournament, said, we'd get on dead well. And he went, yeah, I've heard the same. And that was all we said.
Dean Schofield's an incredible bloke. An incredible bloke. But I ran into him in the sale hospitality for the Harlequins game, of all things. He's JB, come over here. Said hello to him. I looked at him and I'm like, thank God I'm not playing second row next to you. I mean, he's just an enormous, enormous man. So I think the only place I can logically play is maybe as a flanker, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, I'll get on to him ASAP, because you want him on the beers more than anything else.
Oh, top four. Have a word with him, yeah. That'd be ace.
That's all I really want is beers. So I'll just come for beer.
Well, the social will be off the chain.
If you need some water, boys, I'm sure we could provide some of that. Ball boys, whatever. I'll run someone's tea on for him.
Is it?
Oh, no, the water boys is going to be broken players. So it's
well, Simon exactly.
Alcott, Simon Alcott and Carl Rimmer.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Is it?
It's a chance for them to get in the sheds with the lads.
Yeah. Get in the trenches. I like it.
Yeah.
It's quite like that word. Of ordering water from ex-pros. Yeah, we'll do that.
Tubbs, when is it?
Second of October.
2nd of October.
It's 2nd, Chris, isn't it?
No, 4th of September, Mooney's
4th
game.
Of September. Right, 4th of September, even better.
I was going to say, I'm doing super. I'm working on the superbikes at Snetterton. I could have come down and filmed it.
All right. Well, if anyone's at a loose end in 3 weeks' time, we've got the Welsh Charity Vets and Armed Forces Legends at Brickfields.
What day is that?
10th, Saturday the 10th of July. We're capped at 2,000 people.
That's also tempting. That's literally like a 50-minute drive. Let's go. I'll be in touch.
All right. I think you'd have more chance for us of jumping on Ben's testimonial T20 cricket these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was talking to Alex about that as well. I said, can I shock you, Alex? I'm quite good at cricket. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, sorry. I got carried away.
No, it's absolutely fine. Right. We're right at the end. As customary at the end of the podcast, we do a bit of any other business. So anything rugby related or not, preferably not, that's anything that's going on that you want to chat about for 30 seconds or so, get off your chest. Now's the time to do it, Chris, if you've got anything.
What's up, Ben? Oh, no, I was at Dick Manley's funeral today, and I'll be honest with you, I found it really emotional. He's first England international for the Chiefs, and I was. They asked me and Richie Baxter, as current recent generation, to go and be pallbearers, and I'm an emotional character. I was getting caught up in the emotion, and then Pete Druitt was doing the eulogy. Pete said, I first met Dick when I was 17, and I thought I first met Mike when I was about 15. it saved my bacon, because I was starting to cry, and I was like, fucking hell. And then everyone just kept referring to him as Dick. It was just Dick did this and Dick did that. And then I heard Tony Rowe, when they were doing a tribute at the Chiefs, said, yeah, we need to get a Dick pic on the big screens.
Brilliant.
But
brilliant.
Dick Manley, superstar. What a great guy.
Oh, rest in peace, Dick Manley. JB, anything from you?
Oh, he's not even here, shithouse.
JB, any other business?
Any other business for me? No, actually none. Oh, actually yes. This. So, I've got one of two stories to tell. Actually, no, I'll just say this. On Thursday, I dropped my daughter off. No, sorry, I went to pick up my daughter. So I had one daughter in the car, and I went to nursery. And nursery is like a 20-yard walk max, maybe a 10-yard walk from the car to the door and then back again. And in those 10 yards that I went to pick up my youngest daughter, I left my other daughter in the car. Turned round, and there was a woman who'd opened my car door and was now leaning over towards my daughter in the car. Yeah.
Take your kneecaps out.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? So I asked her, like, excuse me, what's going on here? And she goes, oh, I was worried about the safety of your daughter. I was like, I think she's perfectly safe. Thank you very much. She goes, no, you've left your ignition on. No one's daughter is safe because it's clean air day. And I was like, oh my God. So I have had this thing, this little bugbear. Because like, if it was If it's a bloke of the same age, I'd have probably thrown him over the railings. But I can't do that to a woman. That option is now off the table. So I've gone home with my tail between my legs, and this has bothered me for God knows how long. But I did notice that she went back into the nursery or towards the nursery to do something. So I assume that she's picking someone up. So today I thought, right, got it. Went to nursery, and I told the story to the nursery workers. I said, you know, I don't know what she was after. She looked a bit opportunist, but ultimately she's really scared my daughter, and I think she was trying to steal money from my car. So if you just let all the other parents know, that would be great. And one of the nursery workers like, oh, I think we know who that is. So I'm eagerly awaiting the email to all the other parents now.
That's incredible.
So you just stitched her up as a... At least you said she's trying to steal some money.
I thought she was going
to steal my daughter.
No. I was like, oh, she really scared my daughter. But I think she might be after money. Really, really embarrassing. And then you see all the nursery workers whispering because they knew exactly who I was talking about. So there we go. That's how to solve a vendetta with a middle-aged woman.
Oh, very
duly noted.
Very quickly, my niece had one of them, and she got the number of a bloke that she told she didn't want to be with. And she put his number up. What was it? Was it on Gumtree? So free sofa, come and collect this number. But it was his number, and he just got bombarded. And asked for Abdul, and he just got bombarded with people asking for Abdul and his sofa. Absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely incredible. Ben, anything from you?
Well, I mean, advice on how to get one over a middle-aged woman, Russ. One you could use.
I'll bear that in mind.
I've got some thank yous to make, I think. So as Russ mentioned, it was my birthday this weekend, and Mrs. Nicest Man in Cornish Podcasting, who would probably elevate to nicest woman in Cornwall, organised a surprise party for me, and also organised a pretty awesome present. So I'm going to Duxford to fly alongside a Spitfire, which should be really good. Russ and Phil managed to turn up, and the boys bought me a nice present. So thank you to everyone that was involved.
Did mine get left in the post?
You're in Southampton, mate, not filming cricket.
She was also quite worried about someone grassing us up for breaking the COVID rules as well. So, yeah. But I should have known that it was probably something was going on when one of my friends asked me if I wanted to go to the local cider farm at 10:30 on a Saturday morning, and Sarah went, that sounds like a good idea, why don't you go along?
Suspicious when your missus says, why don't you go drinking at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning?
So thank you to everyone that was involved in that. Some people might even be listening to this, so thank you.
Brilliant. Doug?
It's been 7 weeks since my last divorce hearing, and I still haven't got fucking divorced. So just like to say big up to the court system in Great Britain, doing really great work at the moment. The other thing that I thought I'd say is that, I mean, everyone else has gone really, you know, banter, birthday, whatever. I'm watching a French drama at the moment, and it's really good.
Not Lupin. You're not watching Lupin, are you?
No, I'm not watching Lupin, because that would be how they say it. I'm watching a show.
How Eddie Butler would say it.
I don't know if anyone has Amazon Prime. There's a channel on Amazon Prime called Sundance. You can get it for 99p for 3 months at the moment.
Not paying for French drama, mate.
And it's called Le Bureau, and it's about the DGSE. The French Secret Service, and it's fucking incredible.
Mate, I did not vote for Brexit for this.
Baby, one thing you should listen to me about, mate, is telly programmes, and this programme is...
I'm going to do that, Doug.
Best programme I've watched since...
Also, as a divorced dad, it takes about a year, and then it starts to get better.
Cheers.
So it is absolutely shit. For a while, it's real shit, bird. There's nothing. You just got to go through it. You got to keep your head down and keep grafting.
Yeah,
but I mean, obviously, it gets better from someone who's come at the other end. It gets a lot better.
What did John Cleese say about his divorce? He's got a great quote. After he's been told to pay millions of pounds, he apparently stands up and goes, "Your Honour, it's worth every penny."
Yeah, well, I obviously don't have the means of John Cleese, and I've you know, the she has cleaned me out. But seriously, watch.
once again, I remember walking out of a house with clothes and going, "Oh well, that's 33 years of my life. That's just going to stay with her."
Yeah,
she's shacked up with a personal trainer who takes care of all of her needs.
Drinks orange stuff in tins.
Oh, let's move on before Doug cries, Phil.
So I made a bit of a dick move on Twitter the other day, so I'm going to apologise to Alan Dimmock from Rugby World officially, although I have apologised personally to him. But that's done.
Tell Dimmock to fuck right off.
That's where I went wrong, as I did, and it wasn't really fair. My son told me something the other day, and it's likely to be moderately true, something he read off Instagram, but equally probably not, that apparently somebody was interviewing Sergio Ramos about leaving Real Madrid, and I turned around to him and said, "Oh, have you got any hints about where you might be going next?" And he went, "Well, my son's been helping me to study English so that when the offer comes from Tottenham Hotspur, I can turn it down."
Football banter.
Yeah,
well done, dickhead. On a slightly more football tilt, the Euros going on at the moment. I don't know if you've ever seen the Scottish player who tested positive for COVID over the weekend, who two English players were cuddling on Friday night after that absolutely dour ball draw. They're being told to isolate while this guy also has to isolate because he's been tested. But the entire of the Scotland squad are A1. The football, if anything was more broken than football, it's this country. But we won't get into that right now. Fucking nuts.
I'm at a hotel in Southampton, which technically is within the ICC cricket bubble. But if you go downstairs, there's about 500 Indians in the bar all having a good old beer up.
Good.
And I'm tested every day. So.
And you're being paid to watch rugby and French dramas.
Yeah.
You could go to a pub and sit with someone, but you can't stand next to somebody and play a fruit machine.
Yeah.
Or you can't. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going down fucking COVID Avenue this evening. We've all been down that road too many times. Listen, right. Chris, an absolute pleasure. It's been such great fun. Thank you so much. Hopefully we can get you on again soon, and I'll definitely try and get to Brickfields, and we'll definitely try and arrive on September the 4th.
Drop us a DM.
Will do, and we'll definitely try and get there in September for the Ben Moon game, even as visitors, just to come and have a good beer up and watch the game and support the cause as well. So that would be amazing. JB, thank you as always. Great value. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
And you three will probably speak next week after the final.
Yeah. I just wondered whether it was worth putting a play out and say if anybody does want to sponsor us, they'll get the 20 minutes that's cut out of Doug jeopardising his entire career.
Yes. There is some edited footage of this podcast.
That's our first ever Patreon episode, isn't it?
Sponsor our kit. Anyway, go well, people. Thank you very much.
Cheers, man.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.